Happy Tuesday morning, all. We are the Junks. We're coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan, Team 980. 910 The Fan in Richmond, Virginia. That is the capital of Richmond. Capital of Virginia, in case you didn't know that. And the Commonwealth Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junks. If you're looking to be the next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just go to cropmetcalf.com. And you can join their team. You can do that today. You got a two-man Junks team getting you through this New Year's Eve program. It's Cakes, at Money Metal Cakes is where you find me on the Twitter. I'll never call it X. That's a horrible name. John Paul Flame is my New Year's Eve partner.
Yeah, man, and you're actually coming over to the house. That was an upset when I saw the RSVP that John and Amy Auville.
Now,
because you've traditionally done the Wertheimer party, and I'm guessing that the Wertheimers have aged out of hosting a party.
Yeah.
Are they too old to host? You know what? I got together with a friend yesterday who lives in California now. You grew up with him.
Yeah.
His brother lives here. He moved out to L.A., and I was asking him about his parents, and his parents just moved to a retirement community.
Yeah.
Now, he was talking about how it's kind of depressing to see them in a retirement community, but they love it. Now, they're like the youngest of the retirement community. They're like 75.
Mm-hmm.
But he was saying that his mom, you know, I'm asking him, you know, how's your mom doing? How's your dad doing? And he said, you know, my mom used to love hosting.
Right, sure.
And she said the other day, she doesn't have the energy to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So that was my guess. I was like, whoa, John and Amy are coming.
Yeah, we will be there, but there's zero chance that we'll be there late. Like, we'll probably be the first people there. And, I mean, if I'm there, party starts at 7.
Yes.
7 p.m. If I'm there past 9 o'clock, then that's the ultimate upset. I'll just be honest.
Well, yeah, if you're two beers and bolt.
I have my two drinks, and my kids are out, of course, because they're celebrating New Year's Eve, and the dog will be home by herself. So we'll just have to go, and that'll be the convenient bailout. Got to go take care of the dog so she's not lonely at the house.
It's life, man. People who have kids.
Happy New Year!
According to the RSVPs, now there are some people who have not, 66 people coming. It's a pretty big party.
That is a big party. That's a big shindig.
The question I have, and I don't know, is, so a couple months ago, Jason mentioned this singer, Scott Clark.
Okay.
He went to an Italian restaurant. I don't know if you remember Jason talking about this.
I do remember,
And he went to an Italian restaurant.
Didn't he say he was like belting out Sinatra, and he sounded just like Frank, old Blue Eyes.
Yeah, so we kind of wanted to spice up the party, and I just reached out to him. I think he's a Junkies listener. Now, he didn't hook me. I'm paying him.
Right.
What would you? I'll just write it down.
No. I need to. We need.
You
want to
guess?
We need to put this out into the radio listening audience.
No, because he's a listener.
Okay, he's a listener. How long is he performing?
So I told him 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay, so is he performing close to the ball drop, like at midnight? Like
no, we haven't even worked anything out. We haven't even talked about it.
Okay.
The only a couple of days ago, I sent him a text, just and I said, "This is going to be awkward, but how do I pay you?"
Right.
And he's like, "Not an awkward question at all."
Okay.
And,
right.
And then he was like, "A check is fine."
Check.
I was like, "Do you want me to Venmo?"
Is this guy older than Frank Sinatra?
Is Dick Clark hosting your party?
I said, "Do you want me to Venmo you or check?" And he was like, "A check is fine." I think he was just being.
I think
he was being amenable.
For a 45 minute to 1 hour set, this guy's just singing like with a track behind him. Is that how this works?
I think he just brings
he's
a speaker.
Not bringing, like, a band with him.
No band.
It's like a karaoke machine.
Let me preface this by saying.
You could hire me for a lot less.
Let me preface this by saying, last year, I reached out to somebody that we used to use on this show on an annual basis.
I mean, you're basically putting this guy's business out there, but sure.
We used to use him on an annual basis. Yeah. Nice guy. He'd
very
come
nice.
In, do his thing. We always appreciated
it.
So I reached out to him, and I thought that, you know, maybe he would charge me, but he charged me. He was going to charge me triple or quadruple what this guy was charging. So I was like, you know what? I'll just play my Spotify party.
All right, I'm going to guess that this entertainer is charging you. He's probably giving you a little discount because he's Junks Mark, Junks P1. $250 to $300 is my guess. That's just a guess.
No, he's paying me. I mean,
okay.
I'm paying him $500.
$500, I think that's solid. But here's my question. Entertainment.
I actually said this to my wife last night. I was like, because I know about half the people will leave by 10.
Happy New Year.
All right. Then there's going to be people that arrive like 9. Drab, I think, came last year. He arrived at about 11:30.
Oh, Drab's late arrival.
And he's got like some...
barely made it to the New Year.
Exaggerator.
Okay. I was exaggerating. I don't know what time it was. But okay. I know like, you know, he's friends. He plays tennis with this guy, John Beckley, who we met, I don't know, years ago. Through Potbelly, whatever.
Did he bring a big sack of...
No, but he missed him. Like, a lot of people missed...
Skinny Rex.
A lot of people didn't intersect
Have him cater the party.
Yeah. But a lot of people didn't intersect with Drab. But anyway...
I'll be intersecting with the early crowd tonight. I'm just letting everybody know.
So not the Latins.
No. I guess not. I guess I'll be missing them.
So I told my wife, I was like, do you think it would be appropriate to ask them to play like two different 20 to 30 minute sets versus 1 hour. Like if I did 1 hour, I might just do 9 to 10.
Okay. All right.
But see, people are going to be milling around. They're not even going to really be paying attention to them. Like I feel bad. Like we even were looking at the house, like where do we put them? We put them in the living room. We put them here. And I was like, maybe I'll just tell them 8:30 to 9.
Okay.
So like an early arrival cakes gets a little Sinatra.
I can hear a few tunes before on my way out.
And that's kind of like your exit. Like, oh, he finished. Boom, done. You say, Stumper, good to see you. I haven't seen you in five years, whatever. Yeah. And then ask him to do like 10:30 to 11.
I think for what you're paying him, I think that's appropriate.
Yeah.
I think you're paying him a good amount.
JP,
I think that works.
You need to put into his contract that at...
contract? I just got like three text messages.
This is the contract.
But at 12 o'clock and 15 seconds... That he needs to start belting this out.
Oh yeah.
That's
a good one.
Oh, you know what? I'll throw that in. The thing is, he's a really nice guy. Like I reached out to him.
Yeah.
I think Jason had his number. I reached out via Facebook. I can't remember exactly how I talked to him, but he was nice enough to even say, he's like, look, I have a fiance. Is it cool if I bring my fiance to the party? I'm like, yeah, bring her, drink, eat.
Sure.
I mean, just do your thing.
Why not have 200 people at your house? I mean, you're just inviting everybody. It's a big soiree.
Yeah, so you think that'll work? I guess that's what I'll text him. Say 8:30.
I don't think it's an unreasonable ask.
8:30, do 4 or 5 songs. 10:30, do 4 or 5 songs. And he's right. I think I got to give him maybe a minute, though, because so he can kiss his girlfriend or his fiance.
Yeah. No. Not allowed to do that because as soon as it drops, this comes on.
Right.
And I mean, it's just blaring all over Times Square. So there's no 1 minute. I mean, it's got to be playing
as you're kissing
your girl. I mean, it's a New Year's tradition. You can't, there's no 12:01 this comes on.
You would need to pay me all of the money to go to Times Square with a billion people in the freezing cold just... watching bad TV shows being filmed in Times Square and just the lemmings watching them. Oh, you'd have to pay me all the money, Valdez.
Well, I mean, they have live music and stages and everything.
Right.
You're not just sitting there behind Ryan Seacrest hoping to get on TV. And your nubs promotional Planet Fitness hat.
I took my wife to trips to New York to see like shows in the past 20 years, whatever. Quick trips, overnight trips. And walking through Times Square, I couldn't walk through Times Square fast enough. And it's just because there's just too much going on.
You didn't stop at the Lego store?
I'm sure I stopped at the Lego store. I'm sure I stopped at every big chain restaurant known to man that they slap into Times Square. It's so overrated. In my opinion, I'm fine if I never go back to Times Square ever in my lifetime.
And I generally think maybe I'm not cultured that the Broadway shows are overrated.
Okay, well.
They're talented.
Yeah,
I respect it.
They're amazing.
Well, I remember I went to see Chicago with my wife, and about halfway through I said, I'd rather see a movie.
Yeah. Look, JP, you're talking, we're the same guy.
We're simpatico.
Like, I'll see a Broadway show or an off-Broadway show talking like once every 5, 7, 10 years. Like, sure. I'm not seeing them a lot, but every once in a while you sprinkle one in, so like you feel semi-cultured.
By the way, I should give a shout out to our guy Bobby Balicki, who hooked me up with a bunch of Surfside party. And I brought some for Mike Marr because Mike Marr's having a party. Now, I invited everybody on the show. I did not invite Mike Marr because he's in his 20s.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't want to hang out with the, but look, it's going to be mostly 50-year-olds.
No, I'd say more 40-year-olds because I have a 7-year-old. So a lot of the people that I hang out with are younger than me. I'm the old guy in the band.
Yeah. But again, like,
yes, even but that's youngest, significantly older than
even
him.
The youngest set at the party.
And I guess there's some 50-year-olds because some of the guys who grew up with me. I mean, EB's going to be there. You're going to be there. Our guy Stomp Mike that we grew up with that you would know. And then, you know, a lot of people that are probably Jess's age. She probably doesn't like me saying her age, but she's exactly 10 years younger than me.
Also overrated is Auld Lang Syne, which Valdez is playing right now. I don't know why this song is so popular. I don't understand it. I'm sure it's just old and it's tradition that people hang on to. This song that you're hearing right now does nothing for your boy Flakes.
Mike
Marr, doesn't move me one bit.
Is your party a rager? Do you have food at your party?
Yeah.
I can tell you this. We had a party for New Year's when I was in college. And at first, this was very scarring in my life. My parents said that I had to go to the family New Year's Eve, and they and my mom swore that a lot of my friends were going to be there, like my cousins and stuff. I was like, they're not going to be here. And I still remember I was at the house at about 10 p.m. and my boy Stump and Mike's dad, Mr. Fred's, just nodding his head. He couldn't believe it because, of course, Mike and Rich, they were at my college party. EB was living with me. Everybody was at that party. And then finally at like 10:30, I was allowed to go. And then my mom says, you have to bring food. I was like, we have a keg. Nobody brings food.
I would stop by your party, but today is like my Super Bowl. So, no, you know, we're getting locked in. But we're just going to order pizzas like we did last year.
Pizza,
so just a bunch of pizzas, drinks, and then like chips, salsa.
Yeah.
Someone will probably bring a cake or something.
A big 55-gallon drum of Zins is going to be at the party.
I still remember that college party. Your brother went missing. He was doing, people were doing upside down keg hits.
Yeah.
And your brother, who went to West Virginia, party school.
Sure.
I mean, he went like 60 seconds or something like that. And then the next day, it's like, where's Mark? He had wandered, and I think he was at a different floor or something in the morning.
Hey, when you have kegger ragers, sometimes things go sideways. They don't always go as planned.
But generally, your college parties, until maybe Mike Marr's age 25, have very little food.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's always, the emphasis is always on, you got to get the booze first. If some food shows up, that's great. But that's always...
That slows down your buzz,
though. It's always secondary or tertiary.
Right.
Like, as far as where your priorities lie.
It slows down getting hammered.
Definitely. Definitely does. So it should be fun. Looking forward to it, but not looking forward to staying late. And I'm guessing I'm going to see...
You've always been like that at every wedding I've been to. At every party that I've been to since, let's say, the age of 25.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, before that, cakes would get hammered, and you might have been the last guy to pull out of a bar.
This is true. Right? These things are all true.
But once he hit 25, he was already married.
Yeah. I'm an old
maybe
soul.
He had already had kids by the time you're 26.
Kurt was born in 97.
All right, so you were 26, 27.
26, yeah. Mike Marr, could you imagine having a kid at 26 over there behind
I remember.
That sounds foreign to me.
Cakes went to a wedding in Blacksburg, Virginia for our buddy Mike.
That's correct.
Who you'll see tonight. And Blacksburg, Virginia is not close to Olney, Maryland.
It's not.
It's like 4 hours.
It's a haul.
And Cakes rolled out of there at like 10 p.m. We're like, what are you doing? You're not spending the night? It's like, nope, got to get home.
I know, I had a young kid at home. I had responsibilities. So yeah, I will. We will definitely be there. We will have a great time, but probably at about 8:45, I will be heading for the exits. And I will not watch the ball drop in New York City.
Happy doing.
By the way, I invited Rom.
Okay.
And he is saying that he's not going to come, but knowing that you're going to be there and EB's going to be there, and then like other people like Richmond John's coming.
Yeah, but he's...
He likes the ADs.
He loves ADs.
He claims ROM formation has begun.
Well, what, he's claimed that for the last 15 years. He loves ADs, but he also likes hero time exclusivity. Like, he, 50-plus people being there, that's a lot of people feeding him ADs.
You remember the book party cakes when he was heckling Big John?
That is true.
I think he likes ADs. Doesn't matter if it's one guy or 50 guys.
Please tell me you're not going to ruin the party by having Big John do a comedy set.
No. That was one and done.
Okay.
That was one and done.
Okay, very good.
I gave the people what they wanted, cakes.
Exactly. That's what you have to do.
The morbid curiosity.
Speaking of giving the people what they want, we are doing that on a Tuesday, New Year's Eve edition of the show. Spencer Carberry, head coach of the Washington Capitals. By the way, they dropped the puck at Cap One Arena in 6 hours and about 15 minutes. They have a matinee today against the Bruins for New Year's Eve. So, Coach Carberry, very nice of him to come on a game day, about 6 hours till puck drop. So he'll be on at 7. And scheduled is Brian Robinson, running back for your playoff-bound Washington Commanders, coming up at 9. When we come back, we'll get into the Junk's sports page, talk about Monday Night Football and more. We'll do that next here on The Fan. Coming up at 6:45, just about 20 minutes from now, we'll talk about a close call for the Gonzaga Hoops team, and it wasn't on the court.
It wasn't an NCAA title.
It was
because they've had several close calls for that.
Yeah, so we'll get into that at 6:45, but right now it is...
They finished runner-up, Trab? Has Gonzaga finished runner-up twice?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Who did they finish runner-up to? Duke once? Or am I getting that wrong? Drab should know. I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't know. Yeah, they've had good teams basically for 20 years. Right. They've been contenders going back to, I don't know,
and
Adam Morrison?
Since
even before that.
1999, 1998.
It's a pretty good run.
They haven't missed a tournament.
What happened to the guy that was like the NCAA Player of the Year a couple seasons ago? Why am I forgetting his name? I can picture him. He was a Gonzaga stud, Drew Timmy.
He's on the Stockton Kings, I believe.
Okay.
The G League. Shocker, you knew that immediately.
Well, I follow his. Do you think I'm not checking his box scores?
Follow his exploits.
Waiting for that call up?
Yeah.
Of course.
Very good.
All right, we're going to do the little Junkie Sports page.
Yeah, let's get into it.
So you had a football game last night, which meant nothing to the Detroit Lions, because they are the one seed right now, but they face the Minnesota Vikings next week, and the winner of that game will be the one seed in the NFC and get a bye, and obviously home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So people wondered what Dan Campbell would do. Dan Campbell said, it was on my mind, and I thought about it a lot. I thought about it leading up to the game. I thought about it last night, told the staff, but I ended up settling on the right thing to do, which was to play these guys because we owed it to the team. So the Lions played their starters all the way until the end. They end up beating the 49ers 40-34. Jared Goff, 3 more touchdown passes. There's so many quarterbacks having great seasons. Goff's at 36 touchdowns with just 10 picks.
Yeah, like the first 2 years he was there in Detroit, he had, I think, 29 each season. So he's, for the guy who was like the throw-in player, he's had a remarkable 3-year run there in Detroit.
Jahmyr Gibbs runs for a 117 and a touchdown. On the other side of the equation, the 49ers, just a disappointing season, 6-10 now. Brock Purdy throws for 377 yards, 3 touchdowns, but it looks like he's dealing with a nerve issue in his right elbow.
Yeah, he got sacked late in the game, and Josh Dobbs came in relief when the game was, pretty much out of hand. The Lions had a lead of, I think, 40-26 or 40-27, and he got sacked, and Dobbs had to come in. Dobbs rushed for a touchdown at the end to get it closer, but the Lions then close them out 40-34.
Cakes, I think I know the answer, but at the end of a game, if you are the head coach of an NFL team and you score a touchdown to get within a point,
okay,
are you a go-for-it guy to go for the win, or do you like kicking that extra point for overtime? I do know when this happened to the Commanders, against the Dallas Cowboys when he had that miraculous touchdown pass from Jaden Daniels to Terry McLaurin, where all they had to do was tackle him in bounds and the game's over, but he escapes all the tacklers, long touchdown pass. They opted to kick the extra point, which, of course, they missed. I'm a go-for-it guy.
It's all about context. I need some context with this, Jimmy.
All right, so this happened on Saturday, right? Denver Broncos score, and Sean Payton, the head coach, admits he's second-guessing himself now regarding that decision he made in the loss to the Cincinnati Bengals. He elected to kick the extra point to force overtime at the end of regulation instead of trying for two.
If I'm Sean Payton in that scenario, I don't want to face Joe Burrow again. I'm just going to come up with my best two-yard play and hope it's good enough and try to get out of there with the win. If I'm the home team, there's no chance I'm going for two. I'm playing for overtime.
So earlier this season, the Bengals had this situation, and the Bengals opted to go for two and the win, and it didn't work out for them.
Right.
So, you know, it's almost a 50-50, like, if you look at the percentages. I know when that Commanders game, when they pulled that rabbit out of their hat, they had no business in being in a position where they could beat the Dallas Cowboys in that game. I feel like that team's on their heels, you go for it.
Right.
The Broncos game was interesting. I don't know if you watched that.
So, I watched part of it, not the whole game.
I immediately was like, go for two. But there was like 3 or 4 minutes that passed because they were looking at the catch.
Right.
And so in that case, I almost feel
your
like the defense, the defense has had time to settle down.
Right.
So, and look, the Bengals didn't score on their first possession. It's not like they just went down the field and scored and the game was over. That thing went almost all the way to the end. Speaking of coaches, Mike McCarthy, head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, they play the Commanders on Sunday, doesn't want to talk about his job status. Cowboys 7-9. He says, I do appreciate the opportunity to speak on it. I've answered this question the same for however many months now. So I think the focus, I need to make sure I'm doing exactly what I'm asking everyone else to do. We need to finish the race. So he doesn't want to talk about it. Did you see the hug that he had with Jerry? Not this week because they got blasted, but the week before?
I did not.
So, I mean, they've been playing pretty good football with Cooper Rush up until this week. I kind of think he's going to come back. Do you think he's dead man walking?
I don't think he's fully dead. I don't know. Jerry, he doesn't strike me as a guy who's just going to throw him overboard because, I mean, Dak went down. Season kind of went sideways.
Mike has missed a ton of games.
The defense was
cratering. They've had a lot of injuries.
I feel like if Jerry could get like a superstar to replace him, that he might make that move. But like, who's a superstar that's out there that's available? Like, are you gonna punt McCarthy for Mike Vrabel? Are you gonna roll the dice with Ben Johnson, whose offense, by the way, put up another 40 ball yesterday?
So McCarthy, I know you're not a big fan of him. What's he supposed to do? McCarthy, 49-35 in the regular season.
Yeah.
Problem is no playoff success. So they haven't advanced past the divisional round in 3 playoff appearances. And then this year, they're likely to finish 7-10.
The bigger NFL bomb.
What am I supposed to say?
Love that.
That's one of the greatest clips ever. The bigger head coach bombshell that I saw yesterday is that Ron Rivera is getting an interview with the Jets.
Yes. I mean, it's got to be a Rooney Rule deal, right? Because he's a minority, Puerto Rican.
Okay, that's true. Now, is that what he's been reduced to? Now he's just a Rooney Rule throw-in?
Can somebody seriously hire him, particularly after the last 4 seasons? And when you look at his total body of work, out of 13 seasons, Cakes, I think he's been in the playoffs 5 times.
Listen, I am not a Ron apologist. I'm the furthest thing from that. I've destroyed him on the air many times. But here's the one but. If I'm hiring him exclusively as the coach and he has nothing to do with personnel, I might at least consider him and or give him an interview. He's not getting anywhere near the personnel room. His key card does not get him into the room that helps pick the players.
I just don't think he's that good of a coach. Like the same thing that we were talking about that happened with Raheem Morris in this game.
Yeah.
Bad use of timeouts. Mm-hmm. We saw that constantly with Ron Rivera.
True. I agree. But I can't believe I'm on the island defending Ron. I would guess that if Ron were coaching the current iteration of the Commanders and he had Jaden Daniels at his disposal, he would look a lot better.
Of course.
So that's my one very flimsy defense of Ron Rivera.
I don't think he distinguished himself as a head coach.
Oh, I don't think so either.
Certainly as a personnel guy, he was horrible.
The worst.
The coach-centric approach that Dan Snyder tried with Ron Rivera leading the show, horrific. He read the papers, though, Cakes.
That's
remember,
right.
He read the papers.
Yeah.
I just think that they're going through the motions. They're probably going to interview, 10 guys.
Right.
There's no... I would be flabbergasted if Ron Rivera got a head coaching job again.
And also, who wants the Jets job? Like, you've got a weird meddling owner in Woody Johnson. You've got nothing at quarterback at this point. Aaron Rodgers, if he's even back, is old, can't move around anymore. His arm strength isn't what it used to be. Like, your roster's kind of falling apart. That's, to me, that is not an attractive job opening. But somebody will take it if they get overpaid, but I wouldn't want that gig right now.
So, Cakes, your Washington Wizards played last night, lost again.
Jaden Daniels in the building in attendance.
I saw people breaking down his walk, saying that he was limping.
Oh, okay.
You know what? He's fine. He ran for 126 yards.
Yeah, maybe he's just, you know what? Maybe he's a little bit sore.
Right.
It's okay to be sore after an NFL game.
5-25, that's what your Washington Wizards are. They lost to the Knicks. Again, this time Jalen Brunson didn't go for 50-plus, which he did the last time against them. Cakes immediately went to the Bilal Coulibaly box score, Drabby.
I did.
What do you make of Bilal Coulibaly? 1-for-10 from the field, 0-for-4 from the three-point line. He did give you 6 assists, though.
Not great.
Not great. Deep down in his bones, Cakes doesn't really believe he's going to blossom into a star.
No, hey. I actually disagree with that. I actually think,
you think he
does.
Do.
Cakes is stubborn. Yeah.
I'm so delusional that I think that he will blossom into, I'm not going to say a star, but I'll say a very good NBA player. You know what? His numbers, they're not terrible. 13 points a game, 5.5 rebounds, almost 4 assists per game.
Do me a favor.
Those are pretty good numbers.
Okay, 13.
Yeah.
He's a starter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was drafted very high.
Yeah.
I want you to punch up Corey Kispert's numbers, who's coming off the bench.
All right. Corey Kispert.
Because they're not that far different than your guy, Bilal Coulibaly, except he's a better three-point shooter.
Corey Kispert.
I'm going to say he's averaging about 10.5, 11.
Corey Kispert is at 11.4 points, 3.2 rebounds, a paltry 1.6 assists.
But what's he shooting from the three-point line?
Let's see. I don't have that. I can pull that up right here. He is shooting from three-point land 33.6%.
Oh, it's not even as good as I thought. But my point is that he's an off-the-bench guy who's only 2 points different than your guy Bilal, who's a starter.
Yeah, but you're failing to add in the other ancillary stats that actually also matter. You're just a points guy. You only look at points.
No, it's not true.
You generally just look at points.
Just focusing on points... If you look at Bilal's per 36 average, which means if you take all the NBA players and you put them at 36 minutes per game, Bilal is 283rd in scoring.
That's not very high. To be 283rd in something is not great.
Look, I'm not saying you don't need a Bilal Coulibaly if they are to turn into a successful team.
Yeah.
But to me, he's like a fourth or fifth guy on a really good team.
Maybe that's...
Potentially. Like, play
what he
some
is.
Defense,
right.
Glue player. In other words, dime a dozen. You can find a million of those guys in the NBA.
Maybe.
It appears to me. Hey. But maybe he's going to blossom.
I'm in for the long haul with my man Bilal.
Speaking of long haul, LeBron James, 40 years old now, still playing pretty damn good basketball. He's not at the peak of his powers, but he's still, close to triple doubles all the time. He says he could play 5 to 7 more years.
5 to 7? He's going to play until he's mid-40s?
He said, to be honest, if I really wanted to, I could probably play this game at a high level, probably for about another, it's weird that I might say this, but probably about another 5 to 7 years if I wanted to.
Oh, where's my Portis drop? I don't know where it is. I haven't played it in forever.
He's averaging 23.5 points per game on 49.6% shooting, 9 assists, and 7.9 rebounds. I mean, he's still a damn good player in this league. Arguably a top 10 player in the league at 40.
Keep vamping, JP. I need to find Portis.
I don't think he's going to. By the way, Bronny had a game in the G League where he scored like 24.
Trapp probably saw it, playing against his boy Drew Timmy.
I haven't followed it closely, but I did see that he popped for a 24 spot one
very
game.
Very good. Good.
And
for
then,
him.
Of course, the Caps in action a little bit later today. We'll have Spencer Carberry on. The only other story I wanted to mention was college football wise, you know, BYU beat Colorado in whatever bowl that was. And that was the last game. You'll have Shedeur Sanders playing for his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been all this talk that Deion is trying to guarantee.
That is a good, old guy word. I don't think I've ever said it before 10 seconds ago.
Coach Prime tweeted, they've already started the lying and positioning, but they forgot I got time today.
All right, when we come back, we're going to fill you in on what almost happened to the Gonzaga Hoops team off the court. So you don't want to miss that. And at 7 o'clock, Spencer Carberry, head coach of your Washington Capitals, who play the Bruins in just a few hours. He's going to join us coming up at 7 here on the Fan. Caps head coach Spencer Carberry will join us coming up at 7 o'clock. That's in just about 15 minutes, so you don't want to miss that. He's always great when he joins us. Caps hosting the Bruins for a New Year's Eve matinee today at Capital One Arena. So we wanted to touch on this story about the Gonzaga Hoops team. So they flew from Gonzaga's in Spokane, correct, Rab? They fly from Spokane. They take a chartered jet from Spokane to L.A. to take on UCLA. They fly into LAX on Friday. So there's video, and we also have the audio, and we're going to play it, of the air traffic controller talking down to the jet that has landed that's housing the Gonzaga Hoops team. It lands at LAX. And it's on a side, I guess, taxiway, trying to make its way to the terminal. Now, I guess this is just a design flaw because LAX is a huge airport. I guess they can't change it because where the terminal is. You have to cross the runway to get to the terminal. The only problem here is there's a Delta jet screaming down the runway as the jet that's holding the Gonzaga Hoops team is trying to make its way to the terminal. Here's the audio from the tower to the jet that has the Gonzaga Hoops team on it from LAX.
1346, let's hit target at noon. We 1-2-0-6. Keyline, stop. Capital will cross downfield, runway 24 left, line up and wait. Runway 24 left, stop left, 1346. Keyline 563, Capital will hold in position now.
So the pilot of the private jet has to slam on the brakes and stop before they get in the way of this, what is it, a 747, 757?
It's a big old plane.
Attempting a takeoff.
It almost looks like a semi-truck is going to T-Bone Cakes' smart car.
Yeah, that's a pretty apt comparison.
It was an Airbus A321.
Yeah, I mean, those are massive airplanes. They probably hold, I can look it up, but I would guess an A320 holds 300 plus people. It's a huge, huge vehicle. And the fact that they came so close on the runway is just, it's terrifying. And I was talking to Drav about this before the show. Like, I don't fly a ton, but when I do fly, that's the incident that I'm most afraid of at this point. I'm not as afraid of a plane just falling out of the sky or crashing on landing or takeoff. I'm more concerned that the people in the tower are stressed out, overworked. There's too much traffic down on the runways and the side runways, and that the plane that I'm in is either going to land on top of another plane or another plane is just going to smash into the plane that I'm in while it's trying to taxi into the terminal. And you saw that. Thankfully, it didn't happen, but almost happened just this past week.
See, you're a nervous flyer, and you freak out over that. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's not a scary incident.
Mm-hmm.
I focus on the thousands and thousands of airplanes that are flying successfully. Like, to me, that's the outlier, and I just do the math in my head and try not to focus on the near calamity and disaster.
But I think these incursions onto the runway are, I think they're more prevalent than you think.
But we've done this before.
The close calls are
Let's say there was one a day.
Yeah.
How many flights are just leaving the United States every day? It's probably 10,000.
Okay, but again, that's a very callous way to approach it.
One plane crash a day?
No, if there was one runway incident that he's describing, a near crash.
Okay, but
versus how many planes take off every day.
Isn't that still alarming? Like, if there's one happening per day, that's when you have to go back to the drawing board and say, whatever we're doing is not working. Because we're almost having a near disaster every single day.
But it doesn't happen every day. That's why it's big news that you had a near disaster. And I'm just saying, it's just a different way of thinking. Like, how many flights per day in the United States?
I don't know. There are probably 10,000. I have no idea how many flights take off and land.
45,000 flights a day.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that there isn't one a day, but even if there was one in a day, what is one divided by 45,000? A 0.00002% chance. And it's lower than that.
Okay, but you'd be salty if you were the guy on that plane.
I don't think JP's been reading the news recently of what's been going on in the last week with these airliners.
I know that South Korea crash, which was the biggest crash in South Korea history.
Right.
You had 180 people die in that. You had a plane crash in Azerbaijan blown out of the sky.
Right.
You had an incident in Canada. You had massive turbulence on the West Coast. People knocked out all over the place. You had the Gonzaga incident. I mean, of course, if you play the odds, you're going to be fine. When you're not in control of a situation and there's issues involved with the safety, people get nervous. There's nothing really wrong with it.
I just feel like I'm team drab here, where I think in the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to have one of these incidents at a U.S. airport where the plane that's coming across the runway doesn't get the call from the tower. And sadly, another plane is going to crash into it and 500 people are going to die.
How many stories have we done this year with this exact same story?
Right.
Especially because these companies, they pump out flights nonstop.
I mean, I know this is a drastic measure, but is there a way you redesign the runways and like is that possible?
This is tilting.
Where you're not crossing the runway to get to the terminal?
This is tilting because typically when you think of air disaster and dying in a flight, it's you're already in the air.
Right.
And the plane nosediving.
Right.
Well, not when you're taxiing to get ready to take off at BWI.
I've had a paradigm shift for my in-plane worries. I no longer worry about falling out of the sky or a takeoff goes awry and then you just nosedive into the dirt.
You're worried about the runway.
My worry is, as I'm sitting on a side runway or as we're, you know, about to take off, another plane's going to come in or we're going to clip another plane that is where it shouldn't be and somebody hasn't relayed the message and it's too late. And look, is it going to happen to me? Probably not, because I don't fly enough. I might take one or two flights a year, maybe, and that might be aggressive. But it's just terrifying when you see the video of how close the Gonzaga plane was.
But it's also not just my personal safety. I'm nervous for other Americans because of a lack of safety and protocol being followed.
Right.
I don't really care if it's just not just me. I don't want.
You want to be safe for everyone.
300 people in Colorado to die either.
Right.
I didn't click on the story, but the South Korean airline crash.
Right.
Were there two survivors?
There were two survivors.
I saw some story. I was like, how does that happen?
They were sitting like all the way at the back of the airplane.
Wow.
I don't know how. Like, the thing just turned into a massive.
That's a true miracle.
Yeah, because the plane turned into a giant fireball. It hit a concrete barrier going, I don't know, a couple hundred miles per hour. I don't know how anybody survived that.
I might, on Southwest, when you get to pick your own seat, I might go all the way to the back.
All the way to the back? I mean,
that might be the safest spot on a plane.
Well, I know what wasn't the safest spot on that plane. All the way in the front. When you smash into a concrete wall.
And then if you're going to get T-boned like at LAX.
Yeah.
You're better off not being in the middle in the exit row. I think I'm a back of the last plane row. Flyer.
Last row.
Yeah.
I always sit in the back for that very reason. I don't really worry about, I just know that the back there, if you're going to survive, you're going to be in the back.
I like your approach.
Are you an elitist when it comes to the airlines? I'll tell you this, reason why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah.
So Kelsey was home for a week. Mm-hmm. I bought her ticket from LA to DC.
Okay.
She flew into Dulles. She flew nonstop. That's fine. That's right. Preferable. I'm actually going to LA in 3 weeks mm-hmm. with Dylan. We're going to the UFC and we're going to stay with Kelsey and visit her for a couple of days.
Very good.
I got a flight through Frontier Airlines because that's the cheapest.
Put your dukes up. Get ready to fight because every time I see a fight on Twitter, it's always on Frontier or Spirit. Every single time. Every single time there's any sort of big like brouhaha on a plane. It's on one of those two airlines.
Yeah.
So your boxing background, it may come in handy. Just be ready.
I mean, I'm paying so much for the tickets for the UFC. It's at Ballmer's Fancy Arena.
Oh, it's at the Intuit Dome?
It's at the Intuit Dome.
Oh, it's going to be so easy for you to pee. There's so many toilets there.
Is that the deal?
That's part of it. Steve Ballmer loves the fact that they have so many new urinals and toilets.
Right.
People aren't spending time there. They're spending time in their seats watching the Clippers.
But I generally, when I go to one of those travel sites, I tend to use Orbitz. I go to price low to high.
I generally do that too, but I think I am a bit of, if I see Spirit or Frontier, I think I'm going to look for the next flight. I need at least Southwest.
To date, knock on wood, to date, I've been successful with both Spirit and Frontier.
Look, I hope it's seamless for you. I hope it goes well.
Hopefully I don't have a runway calamity.
Well, let's hope that that the air traffic controllers are on their A game. Let's hope that happens. All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears, stop talking about air disasters, and we'll talk about a team that's doing really well. That's the Washington Capitals. Spencer Carberry, their head coach, joins us next.